Welcome to the CRE Shark Eye Show, where we discuss commercial real estate. This is your host, Ishai Breslauer. Here we meet every Monday to talk commercial real estate and prop tech. We will dive deep into the different asset classes, discuss the market, talk about the new and exciting technologies, meet key people in the industry, and get some inspiration. Let's begin. Hey guys, before we start, I just want to point out the 6 best secrets for commercial real estate. It's a free download. Go to the text side and you will find it. It has absolutely great information, completely free, how to become a landlord, how to determine the value of a property, or creative financing for commercial real estate. All of it is completely free. Go download it. Also, I want to point out my CRE crash course. It's a 2-week must-have program with a must-have skills for commercial real estate, like investment strategies, the must-have financial terms, how a deal is done. Go take a look at it, go to the text side and click on the link. And now let's continue with our program. Hey guys, how are you? This is Ishai Breslauer, your host of the CRE Shark Eye Show. Hope you guys are doing fantastic. We have a special guest today, George Abreu. And I'll tell you something. I've listened to some of the stuff that he was interviewed about. And I've listened to some shows. I read a little bit of his stuff, a little bit of his website. His company called Elevate. And I'm sure that after you hear this episode, you're going to be elevated. And I look forward to it. George, thank you so much for being with us. I really appreciate it.
No, thank you for having me. I'm excited to be on.
Looking forward to our conversation. You know what? Before we even dig in, give us a little bit, like a 2-minute elevator pitch about your company. What do you guys do?
Yeah, so myself, you know, I've been in real estate investing for over about 16 years now, full time. Started in single family, kind of worked my way up to large multifamily syndications. That's what I've been working on for roughly about the last 5 years. Also got a construction company that we use for all of our CapEx. Also do some new development, but to date, we've acquired right under 7,000 units, sold about 1,500 of those, and got 1,200 right now in the pipeline.
Wow. Very, very impressive. Already gave me a lot of material to ask you about. George, tell me something. How did you get into real estate? Let's go back in time and then start with that. What got you inspired? How did you get into this?
I was starting to be an electrical engineer. And at some point I realized that I didn't want to be an electrical engineer. I wanted to be an entrepreneur. I wanted to start my own business. Wasn't quite sure in what. And that's when I started doing research and reading up on a lot of successful individuals, and a lot of their wealth seemed to lead back to real estate. So I decided, you know what, I'm going to check this real estate investing thing out. And I ended up hiring a coach and started doing some single family flips at that time. Ended up graduating with my degree and went to go work for UPS in the engineering department. But still, while doing real estate on the side, and finally did enough deals where I decided to go ahead and quit my W-2. And that was about 16 years ago. And I've been doing real estate investing since. I've done quite a bit in the space, everything from just a basic single family flip to scraping it down, building it from the ground up, doing small multifamily ground up as well. And finally, about 5 years ago, I was introduced to multifamily, large multifamily syndications. And I loved it. You know, the instant scale in just one property. And been focused just on that for the last 5 years. I've acquired right under 7,000 units at this point, exited maybe 1,500 of those. And we've currently got a little bit over 1,200 units in the pipeline.
So that's, how do you say, in short, in a nutshell, you gave us like a history that is very exciting. I want to ask you a question. You, like, going back a little bit, you said that you read about some successful individuals that inspired you, basically. Can I ask you who it was? Who were the successful individuals that got you the bug?
Man, I know one of them was Donald Trump. I read Robert Kiyosaki's books. And then finally I ran into a Ron LeGrand book. I don't know if you're familiar with him, but he's who I ended up hiring to be my coach.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing. And today you have a company called Elevate. And you've done, meaning you have a little short of what you call 7,000 units. That's a pretty serious amount of units under management. And I'm assuming what I'm curious, first of all, to hear about is the transition from syndication to being an operator. I'm assuming you guys are operators at this point, right? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So, I mean, I had owned a small portfolio of single family and smaller multifamily. I honestly didn't even like the man. So I've always liked the transformation of a property, you know, taking a really ugly property and coming in and adding value to it. That's one of the reasons I started my own construction company as well. I never liked the management part of it. I never liked to be collecting the rents and whatnot. And that's why the smaller units didn't really work for me. I ended up selling the portfolio and just sticking to fix and flips until I found out about syndications and taking down these larger multifamilies. So the operating part of it there was a learning curve and especially, so now we hire third party management companies and we were more focused on the asset management part of it. But definitely a learning curve there. I mean, this isn't a business that I'm sure, you know, you can't just hire a third party property manager and sit back and relax.
Right. You gotta be on top of them. You gotta know what you're doing. And the asset management is a whole thing of its own. That's why you have to hire asset management manager usually to be on top of it. Absolutely. It's very exciting. Now that you're dealing with that, when I looked at your website, I've seen, and you know what, before we go into the locations, which is the whole topic that I would like to discuss with you, the dealing with the type of deals, if you could tell us the type of deals that you guys deal with, because multifamily is multifamily, but multifamily has different sizes, has different things. You have development, you have aggressive value add, you have core plus, you have income producing, you have different types of the, you know, within the genre. If you could tell us what you guys like to deal with, the type of deals you go after.
Yeah, so we started in the heavy lift C-class workforce housing. Felt comfortable there with having our own construction arm, being able to come in and add that, do those large CapEx projects. And, you know, the yields are nicer there as well. So that worked out. But kind of throughout the years, we still like those, but we also like your A-class or B-class properties. I've done ground up as well. So kind of all over the spectrum, really. And I can't tell you at this point that we do one more than the other. It's kind of like we look for the opportunity and where we think we can add the most value, but it's not always the ugliest property. You know, it's we've had really good success from picking up A-class properties from developers and coming in and pushing those rents and adding, you know, tweaking things here and there. And then right now, I'll give you an example. You know, we're working on a project that's 0% occupied. It's complete heavy lift. And then at the same time, we've got another one that was built end of last year that an amazing looking property and really doesn't need anything CapEx wise. So kind of all over the place.
The one thing I would like to hear is about the locations. I saw, meaning you chose Texas. A lot of people go to Texas. But give us a little bit about why you guys and how you choose your locations, your market. It's Texas, it's Oklahoma, it's South Dakota. Tell us about that.
We go where the opportunities are. You know, we're very optimistic and like to chase those yields. We got to go to certain markets where we feel that the population growth is there, the jobs is there, and it's undervalued. One of the first cities that I saw that in was Houston, Texas. So everybody was all over Dallas and obviously Austin, San Antonio, not so much, but Houston was getting completely ignored. And
when was that?
That was 2019. So 2019, between 2019 and 2020, we purchased quite a bit in Houston. And then come 2021, it just popped. You know, everybody started seeing what we saw. The values increased tremendously. So that's kind of what we're looking for. And I mean, Houston's a big name, but you know, there's other cities that, you know, we're in small Oklahoma City, not a lot in Oklahoma. Not a lot of people know that. One of our best performing deals.
Interesting.
So, yeah. And I'm not opposed to going in and you know, we own a lot in Dallas too, which Dallas has been hot for years, but we're not scared to go to other markets. You know, we're in Georgia, South Carolina, now Florida, like you said, South Dakota. You know, we saw a good opportunity during COVID for South Dakota, and we took advantage.
That's exciting. What's in South Dakota? Tell us about that.
Beautiful views. It's very strong when it comes to small businesses. And during COVID, they barely shut anything down at any point. So we saw that and we found some good apartments and took them down. And man, we can't keep them. As soon as a unit comes vacant, it's gone. We've been raising rents constantly. So a lot of people noticed the value that was there. And now there's not enough supply.
That's amazing. Tell me something. What I want to find out, because you're dealing with so many aspects in this space, the value add, the more aggressive the development, the more A class, B class, a lot of stuff within the multifamily asset class. And what I'm curious about is something that I would love to hear from you. When you go to, meaning we all know what happens to a value add project. It's occupancy is 15% or it's 0%. You come, you make a very aggressive renovation, you do the refi, you come in, you make the, you know, the whole marketing's fine. But, you know, the art is in those, like in those properties where you come in and you have 90% occupancy or 95. And there you find ways to decrease, like, to take some expenses out and put in some more rent and not annoy the tenants at the same time. Tell us about the art, your artwork.
Yeah, I mean, that's almost like next level, I think, depending on where you're at in as far as your syndications. And we're able to maximize that now because we've got a team and they're constantly digging in and, we're building relationships with different vendors, finding out how to get more profit sharing from, let's say, the internet, right? You know, a lot of things that residents are already paying for or should be paying for. And then we're taking those and getting profits from that. You know, renter's insurance. Every renter should have renter's insurance. Well, we've got a relationship now where we get profit sharing from that. So I'm not saying that's where you're going to add all the value, but it adds up when you do those. And then, you know, things, the internet could actually add a lot of value if you're not getting any profit sharing from internet and cable. And then maybe smart features. You know, we've had a lot of success with that in the A class, adding some smart features and charging.
Give me an example.
Man, silly things like just a smart thermostat, a smart lock, and maybe you throw in an Alexa or
I love something.
And
yeah,
charge 25
small amounts. 45. Yeah.
But those small amounts, as you know, they add up.
Yeah, yeah. When you have like 250 units, it's big. Yeah, yeah. And that's the artwork. I love that. It's great. It's great.
Storage is a big one too. If you can find a way to add storage, we've noticed residents can't get enough of it. I mean,
yeah, storage is big.
Yeah, we've got a lot of properties with garages. They're always occupied. So we're about to add some more garages to another property, build them.
Wow. Phenomenal. You know what? I hear you and I hear, so at a certain point in my career, I met a guy who I'm in touch with every once in a while. He has a big, big, big fund. Like at this point, it should be billions. And he started from nothing. And he said to me, I remember that conversation. He said, the devil is in the detail. Like the small numbers, that's where you find the gold. And you have to be very detailed orient, meaning you have to find that. You have to dig into that, and then you find your gold. I love that.
Tell me something.
Yeah, go ahead.
There's a lot going on when you purchase these properties and you take over them and you're doing the CapEx. So it takes a lot of effort. And to me, it takes a team to really dial in and efficient and maximize those profits.
Tell me something. You said in the beginning, I went from single family homes to syndicate and I found out about the multifamily space and syndication, et cetera. And then you said big multifamily, large multifamily. What's the big deal about large multifamily? Why? Because some people are like, no, I'm going for 30 units, 50 units max. That's what I'm going for. What's the big deal about the large multifamily aspect? Tell me.
Well, like I said earlier too, I didn't enjoy managing the properties, right?
Right.
So to me, when you buy something smaller, you don't have the payroll or you don't have enough income to have payroll on site. Like you can't have your property manager or your maintenance. So to me, you have to get more involved in the property and the management part of it. But when you've got 100 plus units, then you can afford that. You can have the on-site staff, and then you're managing them versus managing the property.
Which is better, which is by far better.
Yeah, I think so.
Tell me something. Building a team, when you came into a point where you said, okay, fine, I need to build a team. I need to get the right people around me. What was the thought process and who is the team, meaning what type of people are in the team in order to build the perfect team, or the best team, insourced, outsourced?
Yeah, so I started looking at the bottlenecks, right? That there's only so much each of us can do. It's me and my partner, right? One of the first things was marketing. So I brought in a VA to help with our marketing. Then that was working. So then the next bottleneck was acquisitions. So we needed somebody to come in and help with analyzing the deals and looking for deals. Then we started doing a lot of deals. Then our next bottleneck was raising the equity. We had, with the marketing and then the deals, we had more leads than we can handle. So we brought somebody in to focus on investor relations and raising the equity. Then the next bottleneck was, well, we have a large portfolio. We need help with the asset management of it. So we brought in asset management director. We just kind of keep growing from there.
That's great. And tell me something, when you come into the management team and you take over a property that exists already and runs okay, will you always change the management aspect of it on site or not?
Not always. I mean, I would definitely say it's a higher percentage that we would. There are times, there's an A-class property that we purchased towards the end of last year, and the on-site was, they felt really good. like when we met them, we interviewed them, they interviewed really well. And we actually got them to start implementing our business plan before we even closed. And when we looked at that, we're like, okay, I mean, this is,
that's impressive. This is
good. Yeah. Yeah. So we ended up keeping them. That was a good move. It's turned out well, but a lot of the times we like switching it up, you know, they feel comfortable where they're at, and you never really want management company to get comfortable. You want them to kind of keep pushing and at least see where else they can add value.
Right.
So that's kind of like usually why we come in and change the management.
I want to shift gears a little bit. I want to talk about the financing environment. And with this type of properties, obviously you need some serious financing. And what, if you could tell us a little bit about your financing strategies on a regular basis, and also talk about the current environment with the, you know, the interest rate going up. What do you guys do about it? How, what are your strategies, the in and out talk within yourselves, between you and your partners?
Yeah, I mean, this has been taking up so much of our days for the last month, maybe, or
everyone.
Yeah, yeah. So obviously, with the rate hikes and the interest rising, we're having to look at different options. We're having to get creative. Our go-to, for the most part, was Bridge to agency. You know, Bridge was very, very attractive. So that's what most of our deals were before this year. I mean, we had a couple agencies and a couple HUD loans as well. But, you know, now we're open and looking at different options. We're looking at a fixed rate bridge. There's more programs coming out with fixed rate bridge. Taking a look at agency as well. So the leverage can be pretty tough. Local banks. So we're thinking about maybe recourse fixed rate with local banks. Just trying to find the best option, you know, so that we can keep doing deals even through this environment. Never want to just sit on the sidelines or get into a bad loan, right?
Right. Tell me something. The current loans that you have with the current properties, are they fixed? Are they not? Do you feel the fluctuation over there, the kind of plans that you have with those loans?
Yeah, I mean, we I don't want to say we saw this exactly happening, but I mean, we knew something was going to give, right? So
right.
We sold and refinanced everything we had to. You know, anything that was coming up, we either sold it or we refinanced into long term.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the ones that we, the newer ones where we have the adjustable rates, we had rate caps. So, I mean, for the most part, some of those rate caps have kicked on already. Some are getting close to. But yeah, I mean, we're...
It's a challenge.
Challenge for sure.
Challenge for sure. What do you see? Where the market is going? I mean, you guys look at deals, obviously in places that are where behaved nicely during the COVID, you know, the pandemic. But right now we're talking about a whole different ballgame. Nobody knows what's happening to the market. That's a perspective that, you know, you hear some people saying, no, don't worry, everything will be fine. And then you have those who are saying, we're heading a recession of some sort. And obviously no one knows. No one knows. You have all kind of opinions, but no one really knows. But we as real estate people, we try to look at what we have and what we do, and being very, very focused on the type of actions that we're going to take. And I'm very curious to hear what you guys are looking at and how you see the market.
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you what my gut feeling and what I think might happen. But like you said, you never know. You know, I think rates are going to continue to increase, right? They've said it several times, and how aggressive it's going to be, I'm not sure, right? Hopefully not very aggressive, but it seems like we're going to have a couple more rate hikes. And then I see it leveling off next year, and then possibly maybe mid towards the end of next year, it might even start coming down again. Those are my thoughts. As far as what I see happening in the market this second, you know, we're no longer coming in at whisper price like we were before, or trying to get there. You know, we're definitely being more conservative, and we're offering whatever we feel, you know, if it's 2 million, 5 million under asking, we're going to offer it because there's less buyers out there already. I see it. Sellers are open to taking lower offers. Haven't seen anybody desperate quite yet. I think most of the stuff out there has been, they may become desperate. So, you know, they'd rather sell it now. But I do think we will see some syndicators or operators that have loans coming due, and they're going to have some issues. So
they're going to want to get rid of it. But do you see a shortage of capital? Because you deal with investors also. So you don't see that.
No, the capital's out there. You know, some of it is starting to sit back a little bit. I mean, not the big money. The big money's not sitting back. The big money trying to figure out, you know, where to put it. They want more deals. The smaller investors, some of them are maybe sitting back a little bit. But it's mainly for me, it's mainly the debt. Like, I feel like there's some good deals out there. I'm just trying to make sure we structure the debt so that we're successful.
Right. In a smart way that you won't find yourself in 2008 again. A specific question about, you know, LTV strategy? Meaning, what was until now and what is from now? Meaning, from your perspective. 70-30, 60-40, where are you guys? 80-20?
I mean, yeah, you had lenders going up to 85%.
Yes.
Right. So that was before, right? Now
LTC? I
mean, now you're in the 60-65%. I mean, you get 70%. That's high.
Are you feeling comfortable with that? Meaning from your firm's perspective? Because when it comes to obviously less debt, you need more equity. More equity means more, you know, raising capital from investors, more work on you. It may be less risk, but it's more grind to find the, you know, especially with the type of assets you guys are going for. You're talking about more money. You need to find more investors, more capital. What is your perspective on that?
Yeah, so we've been leaning quite a bit on our JV equity partners that can come in and bring very large chunk of the equity for that very reason. More than we were before. You know, before we would use them here and there. Now, if we want to keep taking down these larger deals, we kind of have to. And we've got good relationships with them, so it's not like we don't want to. You know, sometimes just it's a little bit easier to raise it from just high net worth individuals and not have that JV in there. But I would say that's the big difference. Is you're right. You know, the raise is a lot bigger now because you can't get that leverage on the debt.
Right. You want to take less risk.
Yeah, we started looking at smaller deals now. Not, when I say smaller, I mean 100 plus still, but we were taking down 400, 300, 850 units. I mean, we were taking down.
What size capital are you guys going for, like in terms of the total capitalization until now of properties? Are you in the 20 million, the 10 millions, and the 5 millions? Where are you guys in those areas? What are you mostly looking for?
I mean, shoot, we're kind of all over the place. I mean, we just closed a deal that was right around 20 million, and then we've got one under contract that's 80, another one that's 100 million, or 95 million.
That's really large, yeah. That's large. Yeah. That's, yeah, for sure, for sure. And then when it comes to equity, it goes back to what I asked you, like, you need more equity, you need more capital. At a certain point, I wanted to ask, I'm curious, because I hear your strategies and your growth, and it sounds really fantastic. And kudos to you guys. I want to ask you, because a lot of, I have friends who do that. I have actually a friend who grew from nothing and became one of the big industrial investors, you know, out there, operators. And today, when, meaning there was a jump, obviously, from doing small deals to big deals, and that required a lot of equity, of course, at a certain point. And now he jumped to ginormous deals, like the big, huge deals. And at that point, he jumped from the, how do you say, the big equity to institutional. Are you guys thinking about that jump? Are you guys there?
I mean, I think our next jump is creating our own fund. So versus...
Oh, nice.
We've been doing single acquisition syndications. I think the next step is our own fund. And then take down a few deals with our own fund. And then take the fund to the institutionals.
I like that.
Fund.
That's a good. I love the plan. I love the plan. Listen, it's fantastic speaking to you. We're with George Abreu, who has a company called Elevate, and it sounds like he's elevating, and they're very calculated in terms of looking at the market today. And the market is fluctuating, is crazy, is insane. And as he said, we're waiting for things to happen. He, you know, nobody knows what the future will bring, but they're definitely looking for opportunities constantly. And I love that. Tell me something. You spoke about all those locations. Which one of those locations you feel that is still growing strong? And you would tell your investors, join me. This one is still going strong. Where do you feel more comfortable? Out of Houston, the Oklahomas, the South Dakota, all those.
Oh, man. I still like Dallas. You know, it's my hometown, but I think it's there's a lot of a lot of good fundamentals.
Still growing, huh? It's amazing.
Yeah. Yep.
It's amazing. If you could give us a tip before we said our goodbyes, give us a tip with growth. If someone wants to boost themselves and, you know, grow their business, the real estate business, or if you are an investor and you want to join the right company and you want to invest in the right company, what's the tip you're going to give them? What's the tip you're going to give them? One guy wants to grow a company. The other guy wants to invest in a company or in real estate. What are you going to tell those guys?
I would say the one that wants to grow his company, he needs to focus on the people and his team. It's impossible to really scale a company, you know, to go from, I'm hoping to be at 10,000 units by the end of this year, but I want to go to 100,000. Like, that's going to take a big team.
Right.
And the right people in the right seats. So the guy that wants to grow it, you know, focus on what that looks like and hire the right people. Pay them more if you have to. Trust me. I've learned that throughout the years. And the one that wants to invest in the right company, ask questions. Ask a lot of questions and really vet them out. Ask, how do they communicate? So we believe a lot in communication and we see a lot of syndicators that unfortunately do not communicate a lot with their investors.
Very important.
We're sending monthly updates, pictures, videos when we can. Like, we want the investors to know what's going on and want it to feel real, right? You know, they own a hard asset. Yeah, that would be, you know, look for somebody that communicates with their investors and obviously has a good track record.
I love that. George, thank you so much. I'll tell you, it was a pleasure speaking to you. Tell everybody, you guys can see the links above and below how to reach out to Jordan Elevate. George, tell us, how can people find you guys?
Our website's got a ton of information. If they go to Elevate CIG, so stands for Commercial Investment Group, elevatecig.com. If they want, they can also shoot me an email. It's George or Jorge, J-O-R-G-E, at elevatecig.com. If they say they heard me on this podcast, I can send over a bunch of free content I have. One of them being questions to ask a syndicator if you want to invest in their deal. So,
yeah. Perfect. Sounds great. LinkedIn works, you guys.
Yeah.
Excellent. So LinkedIn works too. You guys heard it. You guys can learn a lot about investments and can hear and can definitely look at the website. I looked at the website. Looks very impressive. They're all over the place and they are calculated. I loved our conversation. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
No problem. You guys, I hope you enjoyed it and I'm going to see you in the next show. Hey guys, thanks for joining me in this CRE Shark Eye show. I hope you enjoyed it. And go subscribe, download, do whatever you guys need to do. And I'll see you in the next episode. Take care of yourselves.